On the Record on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.
Now, in 1968, the Guardian newspaper praised a bright young Catholic MP with a flair for publicity. That MP was Austin Currie. And of course, much has been said and written about Austin in recent days following his passing this week at the age of 82. Understandably, a lot of what has been written about him focuses on peace and reconciliation and his career in the SDLP. But in the earliest days of his political career came a simple protest that would go on to influence politics north and south in the years that followed. It was the occupation of an empty house. And it propelled the name of Austin Currie to the top of the British news cycle. Arguably, Donald Fallon, it created the civil rights movement. And there's been an awful lot written in recent days about those who knew Austin Currie over the decades.
There has. And look, the passing of any towering figure will lead to an outpouring of remembrance and reflection. And it's worth saying, it's a good thing that Austin Currie made it into his 80s. There were numerous attempts on his life and on his family during the Troubles. But it was a piece from Colm Eastwood on thejournal.ie reflecting on a founding member of his own party. Didn't mention, by the way, that Austin went on to be a Fine Gael minister, but anyway. But one I particularly enjoyed was in the Belfast Telegraph from Alf McCreary, who was a student pal of Austin's once upon a time. And he said, "We came from nationalist and unionist communities, but these differences did not matter in those innocent days when it seemed that the violence which had plagued the province in the 1950s would never return. How wrong we were." I love that quote. It's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah.
To, you know, remind ourselves that in the 1960s, a time of television sets, optimism, the Beatles, nobody saw the Troubles on the horizon, how quickly Ulster spiralled out of control.
Isn't it heartbreaking, but also kind of it strikes you with terrible naivety that they thought that the 50s was the bad old days and that was the threshold that they never wanted to go back to. You've touched on it there with the shortage of the acknowledgements about his link to Fine Gael, but perhaps more than any other figure in 20th century Ireland, he went on an incredible political journey across parties.
It didn't begin with the SDLP, it began with what was called the Nationalist Party. We'll talk about them in a while. They were a very curious mix of kind of Ulster MPs who didn't really have anything in common beyond the fact they came from the kind of Catholic nationalist communities, the SDLP, and then later Fine Gael, and a very interesting Leinster House career as a minister for state. So, you know, it's surprising to me, actually, that he ended up in Fine Gael, given the SDLP's kind of perceived historic links to Labour in the South. But he recalls a few other people, Dr. Noel Brown, who passed through so many and sometimes surprising parties in another long political career. But what is remarkable about Austin Currie's political journey is that it began with his election to Stormont at 24 years of age in June 1964. That made him the youngest person yet elected to that institution.
And in a funny way, despite his youth, he could probably only really have come to prominence at the time that he did, because the North was beginning to change in the ways that it was.
He's a real product of his time. I mean, he's the first generation of working class Catholics that make it to university. And, you know, interestingly, though they come from nationalist families, they're kind of beneficiaries of post-war educational reform, another reform in Britain. You know, the British welfare state allows this to happen.
Okay.
So it's not that every Catholic is doing well in the North. There's still ghettos, you know, in places like the Bogside and Derry and West Belfast. Poverty had arguably never been worse than it was at that time. But there's also the peculiarity of an emerging kind of Catholic middle class.
Okay.
You know, people that are seizing on the reforms of the British welfare state. And as one historian puts it, Catholics begin to interact more with state institutions and begin to expect more from them.
Mm-hmm.
So you see in the 60s, people like Bernadette Devlin, for example, going to college, Austin Currie going to college, from a working class background, now a Queen's University educated MP at 24, he embodies the changing society and the belief that Catholics can, you know, move up in the world, at least some Catholics can.
It's remarkable, because you would overlook, with all of the talk about how they were ghettoized and how they were second class citizens and how they were discriminated against, which we'll come to, of course, when it comes to the substance of Austin Currie's career, the idea that there was a kind of a social mobility after the war that did allow them to at least get one foot on the ladder. Bring us back to the Nationalist Party, because you mentioned that it was a fairly loose affiliation. Probably safe to say that most people now have never heard of it.
Yeah, I think even you know, grade A political nerds like me and you often haven't heard of the Nationalist Party. They are a fringe Wikipedia page.
The nicest thing anyone's ever said about me.
A fringe Wikipedia page in Irish political history. But they didn't really have an ideology, you know, beyond kind of being Northern Nationalists. And they were kind of like the remnants of the old parliamentary party, or the old home rulers in the North had just sunk into this new thing. A loose network of MPs, basically a load of local networks, you know, MPs on their own local networks.
Mm.
And like, they had no coherent ideology. Sometimes they engaged in periods of abstentionism. They didn't show up in Stormont or Westminster. And there wasn't even general agreement on that. Some of them wanted to go in, some of them didn't. And when Currie is elected, this 24, year-old member of the Stormont Parliament. Ultimately, he feels, look, we have to make this thing a party in some way. The Nationalist Party has to have a purpose, has to have a direction, and crucially, has to be involved in the social issues of the day. And the issue of issues was, of course, as it always is, housing.
And this brings us then to the unlikely battleground for what became Ireland's first civil rights protest march, because it was quiet suburbia in Tyrone.
Yeah, Kinnaird Park in Culloden, County Tyrone, is a really quiet place. And a couple of years ago, marking the anniversary of this protest, the Irish Times went there and they described it now as a well-kept estate of about 20 pebble-dashed terrace houses. It doesn't sound particularly exciting.
No.
But in June 1968, this estate in Tyrone is the backdrop for an action that really propels the young Austin Curry to the top of the news cycle in Britain, and actually puts his name briefly into kind of international consciousness. It's a big, big story. And ultimately what happens in Kinnaird Park is that number 9 Kinnaird Park is allocated to a 19-year-old single woman, Emily Beattie, a Protestant woman, at a time when there's just thousands of impoverished Catholics stuck on the housing list, hundreds upon hundreds of families. And in more recent times, the Cameron Commission, which we all remember, it was kind of instigated to explore and explain why the troubles had happened. They made the point that by no stretch of the imagination could Miss Beattie be regarded as a priority tenant.
Okay.
And there was a real question, how can this 19-year-old single woman be chosen over so many families for a home? And they decide what they'll do is they'll just take them over. In the early summer of 68, 9 and 11 Kinnaird Park are occupied.
So he moves in there to numbers 9 and 11 Kinnaird Park with two friends and with some other fellow activists. But despite the way in which it's been storied now, they weren't actually there all that long.
No. I mean, you would swear from some of the talk in recent weeks that they occupied the house for months. But Curry, together with Patsy Gildernew and Joe Campbell, they move into one of the houses, three-bedroom house. And it sparked something in Curry when he heard of this, you know, one 19-year-old getting this house. He said it was so blatant, we had to do something. As a public representative, this injustice was rankling and something had to be done. And when he went there for the 40th anniversary, there was kind of humour in how he told the tale. Joe Campbell, who was with him, said, I hope we're not left here overnight because I have to milk the cows in the morning. And I said, this is Austin, I said, if we're here overnight, we might have a bit more trouble than that. And yeah, look, of course, the fear of mob violence was very, very real. And the civil rights movement came up against some real nasty mob violence in its early days. But they only held the house for a few hours. But it was a significant enough stand that the media had assembled outside. That was the job done in its own sense. And from the very beginning, I mean, the Guardian newspaper, when they describe Austin in that way, a bright young Catholic MP with a flair for publicity, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, because he was savvy enough to know that that's all right, we've got the publicity, we don't need to inconvenience ourselves and hope that the cows go unmilked for an evening. Housing at its heart, though, and I want to be careful about how we even describe this, that housing was about votes, but we don't mean votes as in trying to win the vote of somebody going there. This is a much bigger issue than a few families, because ultimately housing was actually linked to your ability to vote.
This is extraordinary to us today in the system that we have, but the allocation of social housing in the north was really at the forefront of how discrimination fostered, because the right to vote was linked to property. So, you know, by refusing houses to the kind of Catholic minority as they were at the time, you were restricting their ability to vote. So it was a way of ensuring there was kind of unionist control of local authorities.
Kind of weird gerrymandering of the electorate.
You had this weird situation in places like Derry where you had nationalist majorities, but the local councils remained kind of strictly under unionist control. So yeah, for Curry and people like him, they understood there was a connection between political power and putting people into houses.
So all of this then prompts a larger movement, and Curry and others deciding that the Nationalist Party needs to be given a kick up the backside, needs to be given some kind of an overhaul or a regeneration or a rebirth or a manifesto of some sort. And from all of that then emerges the SDLP, which right up until the time after Good Friday was the most significant party in Northern Nationalism.
Yeah, I mean, a party that had its roots in the Home Rule Party, a party that you could trace right back to the early 20th century, and it collapses over the occupation of a house in a couple of hours. And it kind of does. That protest is the making of one movement and the breaking of another. The Nationalist Party was pretty much over anyway. It's surprising it lasted as long as it did. But now there's this new enthusiasm for what, you know, people like this young MP are doing. And from it all comes the Social Democratic and Labour Party, formed in 1970, Curry, John Hume and others. And, you know, it's worth saying that Curry and his wife and children, they endured so much in the years that followed. His home was attacked on more than 30 occasions, which is just extraordinary. On one occasion, his wife was badly beaten by home invaders. So, you know, the SDLP may have been the moderate wing, if you will, of Irish nationalism, but Curry still endured much as a result of his commitment to it.
And aside from the legacy that Austin Curry has left us with after he's taken his leave this week, he does leave behind him a memoir, which is something that I reckon a lot of people might have some interest in picking up now, but an awful lot of reflection as well.
Yeah, and what was great about Curry was I met him on a few occasions over the years at various things. He was someone who was really conscious of the past. He'd studied history at Queen's University, and he always gave his time very generously to researchers, historians, students that were trying to understand what it was all about, the civil rights movement, the North more broadly. So he's left us an awful lot to ponder. You know, some politicians hope we forget everything they've done, but Austin Curry was very different. He wanted to ensure that this story, the civil rights movement, was there on record. Mm. And look, at the remove of five decades, it might feel like a long time to some listeners, but in the context of human history, it's the blink of an eye.
Yeah, yeah.
We can kind of forget how transformative these times have been for Ireland. I was really struck looking at the Dáil archive by a speech Curry gave in Leinster House, where he said, "In the North, we were not even allowed to use names like Seamus or Sean. When my brother's godparents went to register their birth, they were told no such names as Seamus or Sean existed in Northern Ireland and were asked for their English equivalent."
Oh,
that's
wow.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the course of his political career, some will say Austin Curry changed much. He did, but, you know, so did the island of Ireland.
The idea that you couldn't register a child called Seamus or Sean back in his early life, and now you have GAA clubs in East Belfast, and how multicultural Northern Ireland has become, like the whole island has become. It is remarkable just how much has changed, particularly when you say, you know, that it's a life is the longest thing you'll ever live, but it's a very, very short period in the grand scheme of history and occupation in this island. So remarkable stuff. Donal Fallon, as ever, thank you for that. Reflections from Donal Fallon on the death of Austin Curry, the co-founder of the SDLP, who passed away this week at the age of 82. Donal is the author of Henrietta Street, From Tenement to Suburbia, which would probably make a really good Christmas gift for a lot of people if that's the sort of thing that you'd be casting your mind to now, because it's lads, it's only 41 days away. No, 40 shopping days. So Donal Fallon's Henrietta Street, From Tenement to Suburbia, is available in all good bookshops now. He's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast, which is a history podcast about Dublin history, which is not something that you'd have to pay for Christmas, because it's available free anywhere you get your audio online. So if there's someone that you really like but you don't want to spend money on, maybe maybe
Spotify link.
Maybe just share on the hyperlink through WhatsApp or something, and you give them a nice Sunday afternoon's listening.
On the Record, on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC, a community of solvers coming together in unexpected ways. It all adds up to the new equation.